Listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
All righty. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is James LaFond. He is the co-host of the Crackpot Podcast with Lynn Lockhart, and I have all of his links posted on the schedule page. I will also post them in the chat room. So anyway, excuse my telling my story, but I just felt compelled to tell it.
My story.
Yeah, I like it.
One of the few types of writing I want to continue doing is actually biographies of non-famous people. I try to do at least one biography a year, and I like hearing people's stories.
As I said, I often felt his presence, and I took this this class about a week ago about that kind of touched on psychic phenomenon, and I thought about him. So anyway, so what is your next your next goal, or your next? You said you were going to write some.
I have 9 broad categories that I write in. I have now completed writing 9 Plantation America history books. And, they range from 100 pages. A couple of them are 700 pages. Most of them are somewhere halfway between. I put a limit on it at 12. I want to stop doing this kind of writing before the next presidential election, as with other types of writing I'm doing that could get me in trouble. And, this was a side alley. I never planned on writing anything about this the slavery thing. So I'm limiting it to 12 books. I had 2 novels I've been working on for 8 years and aren't done yet. I have to finish that stuff up. But after 2 more years, the only things I want to be writing are biographies, myths. I like going over old epic myths and doing adaptations of them, and fiction. Most of my writing has been how to fight and how to survive in a crime-ridden city. That's probably 70 of my titles have been in those areas. I'm not going to do any more of that kind of writing. I think I've done enough of it. I'll keep the options open for maybe doing more history. I have a very large history project. It looks like it's going to have to be published in 2 volumes. When I finish that up, maybe I'll decide to write another history book down the line, but I want to do more fiction and biography first.
Yeah, that sounds good. The history, I think, is really important. I think it's essential that people really learn our accurate history. I think history's prologue, you really need to learn what happened before so that you can anticipate and see how it has impacted our current situation, which it definitely has. And you said that you'd been censored or criticized for some of your writings.
I've had my sites been blocked or taken down 3 times, my main site. That's why we have these alternative websites. I've also had 4 of my books have been banned. They use the term...
Really?
Yeah, Amazon used the term suppressed, which I actually got them to change that term. I would even publish information from the back end of my POD page with Amazon's subsidiary, CreateSpace. And after I pointed out that all 4 of these titles have been treated differently as if it was an experiment in censorship, 2 of the titles had been in print for almost 20 years. And there's nothing even politically correct in them, but they were my biggest money-making titles. So it's obvious why they got yanked. I lost a good portion of my income right there with those two books.
Wow.
And the other two titles, one of them was banned as a print book, but not as a Kindle book, basically because of sloppiness on their part. And the other one was banned in the womb. I uploaded this thing as a draft just in case I wanted to print a copy out and proofread the hard copy. And the title wasn't even necessarily the final title. It was titled Barbarism versus Civilization. It got suppressed the day that my niece uploaded it on the back end of the site. I can't even open up the document. So what I did is Autumn in a Dying City and Barbarism versus Civilization, since this list was in alphabetical order, they were right next to each other. So I published these four lines, the two center lines being these two titles, on my site. And I said, look, one of them says suppressed and the other one says create space hold. These people ought to get their act together and come down with just like one thing. I think suppressed sounds kind of heavy.
Right.
Within 8 hours, I checked the back end again and they both said create space hold. And suppressed had been taken off of the one, and three other things had been altered to fit the other one, so it was uniform. So there's there's somebody outside of the publishing platform that does not have access to the back end of the publishing platform, but can demand that people who do have that access censor my work. And the people who are censoring it are not very enthusiastic about it, because they never do a job that shows any initiative or any desire to erase what I've written. They just do the bare minimum. So it's been an interesting evolution. I believe censorship's going to primarily be expanded as a privatized program. But libertarians probably never thought that the thing that was going to be most successfully privatized was censorship, but it is so.
Are you still there?
Yes, yes. Could I show you explain to you briefly how I use a primary source that's not an autobiographical narrative?
Sure.
We have Helper's book is 288 pages,
right,
densely packed with information. What I do is I identify a thread, and then I go through the book, and every time that thread pops up, I mark it in the margins. And when I identify a second thread, I follow that through the book. I came up with 13 threads in his book, and I'll just read the titles. I take all my titles for these are basically summations that I'll publish. I'll do 13 chapters in the book. American Spartacus will be a look at Helper's ideas here. And the first one is titled The Hay Crop. The second one is titled The Second Degree of Slavery. These are his terms. The third one, this is my favorite, Beneath the Iron Heel of the Black God. Okay, that's Helper's words. And the fourth one was The Accursed Stain. So I use his words for the titles, and then I try to stay thematically more consistent than the author originally did. Okay, it's a lot easier for somebody in our day and age to write something with a word program than it was back then for a guy writing in longhand with a pen. Okay, so it's actually, I have advantages that he didn't in arranging his themes more concisely and more consistently. So that's what I'll do, because I'm using the computer and he had probably a quill and an inkwell.
Well, certainly it is much easier to use Microsoft Word. And
yeah. If I was writing with the equipment he had to write with, I'd still be on my first book and you wouldn't be able to read any of it. You'd need a pharmacist to read my handwriting. So.
Wow.
On the subject of slavery, I could take just a minute to briefly outline the periods in American slavery in English North America, in terms to who was enslaved and what.
Before. Okay. That sounds good.
The 1500s was a period primarily of trading contact, in which nearly everybody that was enslaved was a European who was enslaved by Native Americans. the Roanoke colony was not lost. It was intentionally marooned. A lady named Lee Smith wrote a brilliant investigative book about this. The Roanoke colonists were Welsh people who were intentionally marooned by agents of the Virginia Company so that Sir Walter Raleigh would lose his contract to Virginia and his head, and they would get the contract to Virginia. And they mostly served as artisans and miners for an Indian tribe that had access to copper deposits in the southern Appalachian Mountains. Most of the slavery took on more of a familial aspect, where, like Captain James Smith, ship's captains would very often give or sell a boy to a chief, and he would usually love this boy as his son and raise him as his son. Okay, so it wasn't really slavery. And the other contact was people that had goods that you wanted, for instance, guns and steel. The one thing that every Indian chief had a lot of was attractive young ladies on hand to entertain the captains and the leading men of the trading expedition. And I think this is one reason why the Indians in English North America did not suffer very greatly from epidemics like they did in other areas of the Americas, because they were actually intermarried. By the time the Jamestown settlers hit the beach on 1607, you have three bearded Indian chiefs, Chief Henry, Chief Mosca, and Chief Powhatan, who are obviously already mixed race people. That's what the joke about Pocahontas was earlier, that she had English ancestry.
Right, which is very interesting, because Native Americans don't have beards. And so...
Look at an illustration. There's actually a commemorative Canadian stamp from 1614 of Chief Henry. The guy looks like Macbeth. Okay. The period of the 1600s was almost exclusively a period of Europeans enslaving Europeans in America.
Wow.
Okay. And then they began enslaving some Indians as well. And they did, starting only 12 years after Jamestown was founded, they brought 20 African-Americans from the Caribbean. They came up from Barbados. And the proportions of African-Americans in Virginia went from 20 in 1620 to 200 in the 1640s to 2,000 in the 1670s, and then up to 4,000 in the 1690s. And this always stayed at less than 10% of the enslaved population. So in Virginia, during Bacon's Rebellion in 1676, you got 46,000 people. Only 2,000 people are African Americans. Most of them, but not all of them, are slaves. You have 200 landowners, roughly, and you have roughly 2,000 free men who caused the rebellion largely. And then you have this mass of like 38,000 people who are not free and who are not African and who are not Native Americans. And that's what it looked like in the 1600s. In the 1700s, you have a period in most areas where you have an equal number of people of African and European extraction enslaved on plantations. And then when you get to the 1800s, which is where our perspective comes from, by 1820, people were only offering 6 cents for a runaway white slave.
Oh, my gosh.
And they were buying and selling. The term was Negro. They used the term Negro. They were buying and selling Negroes for up to $1,400, as little as $800. Okay. So there was this, what Hinton Rowan Helper covers is how this distorted the entire economy and essentially gutted the economy of every state that stuck with the slave system as it was. And his book is devoted to just demonstrating what a disaster slavery was on an economic level.
Oh, absolutely.
For instance, we think of cotton and sugar and tobacco. The primary agricultural product of the time was hay. That was the petroleum of the age, because everything was horsepower. You were starting to get some trains in right before the Civil War, but it was a horse-powered economy, even in the North. New York was supplying hay as far south as Alabama. Maryland couldn't feed its own horses. They had to get it from Pennsylvania. It was a complete disaster because free men work harder than men who are held in bondage. So there's basically your four periods of slavery in the U.S. And one academic wrote soon after World War II that there is no sense in looking further back than 1830 when one is looking at slavery in America, because that 30-year period is what fomented the Civil War, and the Civil War was the true birth of this nation as it is. And I could see a lot of arguments for that perspective, but if the 30 years before the Civil War are important in understanding the Civil War, it seems to me that the 30 years before 1830 would be important for understanding what was going on in 1830.
Oh, absolutely. And there was a lot of stuff going on. There was the 1837 crash, an economic crash. There were all kinds of things going on that led to the so-called Civil War. And in my trilogy, the name of that title, or the name of the name of the chapter, where I include Hinton Rowan Helper's information, is called "The South: A Profitable Colony," and that's pretty much what it was. They depended on the North. They had some cash crops, tobacco, cotton, most of the things that they needed to have, food and anything else, they had to go north for. And so they were pretty much a colony. Backtracking just a bit.
Yes.
I remember as a child I read this book called Sacagawea. And she was Native American, was sold.
Frenchman.
Yes. Yes. When she was 12 or 13. She only lived for 20. She was 24 when she died. But she's the one that helped the Lewis and Clark expedition, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
Native American women served as translators a lot.
Right.
There's some evidence there that just women are more elastic when it comes to using language and learning new languages. And this was the job of a lot of the daughters of Native American chiefs, was to serve as translators.
Right. Which is quite amazing when you consider that, because it does take a certain amount of mental plasticity to to figure other languages out, especially when you're so young. But it does demonstrate that that they were very intelligent, and I appreciate that.
Part of the language mechanics there probably had a lot to do with the fact that they were also sleeping with the visiting European dignitaries. There were many marriages arranged between chiefs and who they viewed as the most powerful, newcomer that they met. And it was a form of alliance.
Right.
It's a subject of, one of these books is titled Pale Face. I'll be writing that next year, but I've run into so much white Indian stuff due to the runaway situation and that people intermarrying with these different tribes that they ran away to, and also the fact that the governor of Maryland, Ward Calvert, was caught selling six Englishmen to Indians in exchange for furs, and I believe it was 1675. And a letter was sent home to England complaining about this. So there was a lot of mixing.
Yeah. Wow. And we'll pick this up on the inside. We'll be right back.
We're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it. At AROutfitting.com.
All right, welcome back. This is Deanna. Excuse me. This is Deanna, and our guest is James LaFond. He is the co-host of the Crackpot podcast with Lynn Lockhart. And I will post all of his links in the chat room, and they are also, of course, on the schedule page. Okay. We were talking about?
The intermarriage between Native Americans of Amerindian ancestry and Native Americans of European ancestry. I will be doing a whole book about that. It's such a huge subject, it deserves multiple books, but I feel put upon just having to do the one to put into this series to put some things into context. You have to understand that the Native tribes, many of them did not even have Native names. The Westos, the Stockbridge Indians, the St. Francis Indians, the Seminole Indians, that's English for Cimarron, which is Spanish for runaway, the Doeg Indians. You have Indian tribes named after English words and English architecture. Okay, so and some of these tribes, when you research them, you find out they wore cotton clothing. They didn't hunt for their food. Their women would put in orders with the British military authorities for blankets and rations and so forth. And these men went out and they hunted Indians. Okay, so you were talking about counterinsurgency forces. This was after the French managed to buy off some tribes that had previously been in the pay of the Pennsylvania Dutch and the English lords of these different provinces, and they worked as slave catchers. So you had a lockdown system then. You had the British Navy and the pirates or sea dogs that worked in concert with the plantation owners on the seaboard. If you ran away, you had to deal with that. You know, a lot of pirates came from there. A lot of runaways became pirates. The other way you could do is you could head for the Appalachian Mountains through these primeval forests, and that was very perilous. If you were a young boy, you might very well be adopted. If you're a grown man, you were dead. They did not want a civilized man in their society polluting it. Women and children they took, but men they did not want. I'd like to read a manumission letter, okay, from Pennsylvania.
Please.
Okay. This is the forerunner of our passport and our identification card. Whereas this was issued in Pennsylvania, whereas the bearer, Mr. Mitterberger, music master, has resolved to return from this province to his native land, which is in the Dukedom of Württemberg in High Germany, I have, at the request, granted these lines to certify that ye above named Mr. Mitterberger has behaved himself honestly, diligently, and faithfully in ye offices of schoolmaster and organist during ye space of 3 years in ye township of New Providence, county of Philadelphia, and province of Pennsylvania, etc., so that I and all his employers were entirely satisfied and would willingly have him to remain with us. But his call obliges him to proceed on his long journey. We would recommend ye said Mr. Mitterberger to all persons of dignity and character, and beg their assistance so that he may pass and repass until he arrives at his respective abode, which may God grant, and may ye benediction of heaven accompany him in his journey. April 25, 1754, John Damer, Captain, Sam Kennedy, Medical Doctor, Henry Pauling, Esquire, Henry Marstella, Matthias Gamelin. Five people have to sign this document so that he's even allowed to leave the province. And he has to seek permission to travel through every other English province. And he has to seek like permissions when he goes through England, through Holland, and back to Germany, which turned out to be very difficult. Certain Dutch people who had sold many Germans into bondage tried to block his passage back home because it was suspected that he was going to do what he did, which was write this book, which he dedicated to his Prince of Württemberg, describing how 50,000 people a year are sold out of Germany by Dutch to the English plantations, that half of those 50,000 people die crossing the Atlantic in miserable conditions, and that the rest are sold. Many of these people that are sold actually paid for their passage, and they get sold. And he goes through, I made a dozen articles out of summaries of his book. He tells how there was a law against cursing. You could not curse or break the Sabbath in Pennsylvania. If anybody accused you of cursing, you were guilty, so long as you had collateral to be taken by the authorities, which was usually your children. Children would be sold for a period up to 11 years, as short as 1 year, as long as 11 years, if their parent was heard or was said to have been heard swearing in the streets of Philadelphia.
My goodness.
If you were in debt in any way, they would put you in prison unless you had children. Okay, children were, the enslavement of children was greatly desired because children could be claimed to be useless until they hit the age of 12.
Wow.
So you could make them.
And certainly it was deliberate. They would look for people who had children. Find the people to arrest. Okay, we're going to a break. We'll be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you one from Amazon.com. I just wanted you to know I saw my doctor and I laughed because he said, "I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it." I have been taking Extendivite. I had borderline high blood pressure, heart flutter, high cholesterol. I changed my diet and included Extendivite with an amazing turnaround for the better. A few months later, I had a doctor's appointment and took a stress test. I passed. No heart flutter. Blood pressure was perfect. My doctor even took me off my medicine. I thank you truly from the bottom of my heart. This stuff works, and I'm so grateful for Extendivite. Thank you, Justin G. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guest is James LaFond. He is the co-host of the Crackpot podcast with Lynn Lockhart, and we're learning quite a lot of things that probably we didn't know, and it's quite eye-opening. So, James, please continue.
Yes. One thing I'd like to bring up is this false polarity that I found bouncing from left to right through the history of the coverage of Bacon's Rebellion, which was one of the most violent episodes in American history, and very few people know anything about it. It's a ideological football that gets kicked back and forth. There's two narratives. Half of the writers, one being Musiak, who wrote a historical novel that was written for the purpose of conveying historical information. It wasn't for entertainment purposes. In 1897, his title was 100 Years Too Soon. This was an American revolution against British tyranny that just occurred 100 years too soon. And the current academic view of it is it was an example of white American hatred for all things native, and it was nothing but a way for the working class white person to slaughter their hereditary racial enemies and take their land. Now, there's nuggets of truth in both of these views, but they're both almost entirely false. And it's just this false polarity where you bounce back and forth between which one was it. It was actually a very complex thing, and it was the war was predominantly a war between landowners. You had the minority landowners that lived on the frontier. And at the time, the frontier was impenetrable. Englishmen could not go there. They had no woodsman skills. And they're faced with an enemy that's literally like Superman. They're like untouchable. And all the descriptions of these Native Americans that are put in illustrations and in words by the early English of the first 100 years, they describe them as virtual giants. And they're like martial gods. Well, they come from a meat-eating culture where they're doing they're working as hunters from the time that they're 5 years old. And the English people that meet them are malnourished people who very rarely eat any meat or vegetables in England. And all they eat is Indian corn when they get to the U.S. So you actually have this extreme disparity. 100 Susquehannock warriors terrorized the plantation of Virginia that held 46,000 people, terrorized them for over a year. And they were screaming for help from the governor, and the governor had made deals with these Indians. One of the deals was exclusive trade agreements, in which he'd trade them guns for furs. But the other deal was, our people run away, you're going to catch them. And this whole war started as a mistake. Some Susquehannocks were mistaken for Doeg Indians, okay, who were actually runaway white guys. They were rogues. And so you have an accidental war, and nobody can untangle it once it gets started. It's this big bloody accident, and it's fueled by the fact that there are now 2,000 free men in Virginia who own guns. They've been given guns because their job is to be the militia. They can't own land. They can't improve themselves. They're not allowed to vote. Okay, so they're almost slaves without a master. They're now the slaves of the governor himself. So these men stage a revolt because the governor has not done anything to protect them against the Susquehannocks. And when they finally raise an army of 800 men to go after the Indians, these 100 Indians, they don't even do it. They go and they fight the other English because they know they're going to get cut to pieces out in the forest. So this is what the plantations looked like at the time. It was a big farm stuck between a trackless wilderness and an ocean, and you were stuck there. And there wasn't really any royal tyranny here. The king of England cared very much for his subjects, even the servants. He was appalled at how they were treated. And up until the revolution, English magistrates were busily trying to enforce laws on how badly you can beat your servants. They were trying to prevent people from killing their servants. They were trying to get them to feed them some meat and some scraps of vegetables. And they were also busy releasing people from bondage who could prove in writing. You couldn't make a court case unless you could read and write. So some of the only people that were able to get manumissions in the 1700s were Chinese. They were people that had been offered jobs as translators and academics in London, and they ended up getting dumped off as household and land clearance servants in Chesapeake Bay region of Maryland and Virginia. Since they were literate in multiple languages, they were able to go to the royal magistrate, because none of the local plantation owners were going to let them out of there, and prove that they had been kidnapped. Okay, so this is why literacy was greatly feared. And as you look at runaway servant ads, you see in the later part of the 1700s, many claims that this person, this runaway servant, was a school teacher. So he may be forging passes for his mates. Okay, so there's a lot of this. There's a lot of this fear of the literate slave, and it's one reason to really try to switch to the African slave, who there was a great attempt to intentionally maintain their illiteracy. In fact, Frederick Douglass in Baltimore, in the Canton neighborhood, Fells Point neighborhood of Baltimore, Maryland, where I grew up, he learned how to read and write himself by playing a letter game with the local boys, the local white boys, okay, that were his friends on the street. They actually taught him on fence posts and fence slats how to use the alphabet and read and write a little bit, because that was the key. You had to be able to forge a document, because this was a police state without a police force. Every citizen was deputized to round you up, okay? It was a crime not to round up a runaway. Benjamin Franklin talks of being questioned when he comes to Philadelphia after he ran away from his brother. His father sold him to his brother. His father had 17 kids. They were economic units. So he sold his youngest child to one of his oldest children. Benjamin's older brother used to beat him on the printing press every day. So Benjamin got sick of it. He ran away to Philadelphia, and he was immediately suspected of being a runaway, but he was literate. He soon started his own newspaper. So that was the key, was literacy, attaining it and keeping it from people. So, and that's the three ways that men got free under this system is they became a pirate and then they died, because almost all pirates were hunted down and killed. Or they became an Indian, or they acquired literacy and worked their way free. And you had to be literate to maintain your freedom, because if you fell into debt at any time, anybody that was not a member of British royalty could be sold if they fell into debt. You could be Donald Trump one day, and you could be a slave the next day. That's how the system worked. There was no tolerance for debt.
Wow. Now, do you find any comparisons or between education now and or withholding education then and now?
Well, I think what they're doing now is a much more efficient way to cultivate a mind slave. Ultimately, the slave's got to be enslaved mentally before he can be assumed to not be a threat. So by mandating education, you can academically engineer a race of slaves, of civics. And then you just have to worry about the weird 5% that actually read books. And go step on them, squash them. That's much more efficient than what had been done in the past, but they didn't have the means to do that in the past. It was not easy. You didn't have the materials that Gottlieb Mitterberger to get a school teacher for their district in Philadelphia. They had to rent this guy out of Germany.
Wow.
Okay, so I found 5 ads for runaway school teachers. Which you have to imagine. Now, these school teachers were mostly private tutors for the children of the super rich.
Right.
So you can imagine what a nightmare it was to be a slave and then be the teacher to some rich brats of the man that owns you.
Right.
I wonder why these guys ran away.
Oh, gosh.
And there was no discernible difference between the way slaves of European and African origin were treated. There was really no difference. Eventually, the Africans and, their descendants in North America, the full weight of the system that was developed to grind up all of these English kids fell on their shoulders in the end. And it was brutal. You had men being burned alive in the 1750s in Virginia. In the 1850s, 10 years before the Civil War, you had guys being burned at the stake for running away. It was that bad. And now I've charted 395 servile rebellions during the plantation era. Almost all of these have mixed race protagonists and mixed race antagonists. I mean, you'll have white masters and black henchmen on one side, and you'll have white slaves and black slaves on the other side. And even when you get to the point in the 1840s, where almost everybody that's held in bondage is then of African descent, you'll see local poor whites helping them out.
Right.
Okay, because they're only one generation removed. In fact, David Holliday was the last white slave I could find evidence of in Maryland, and he was not manumitted until 1837 at about 37 years old. So this guy was born into slavery in 1800 or thereabouts, and was finally released at age 37 in an era when men made their living with their bodies. And it was by today's standards, most of what men did was an athletic endeavor. I could tell you, as a man who's been a coach for 30 years and I've fought for longer than 30 years, 35 is pretty much the death sentence. Now, that's your funeral shroud as an athlete.
Right.
Okay. And this is with modern medicine. So this is before sports medicine. When you're getting released at age 37, it just means they don't want to have to feed you while you die.
Sure.
Okay.
So, they've worn you out. They've used you up. You're gone.
When I got into this, I actually visited some graveyards where these people were interred, and they weren't even labeled. And you have a whole graveyard full of a couple of thousand Irish Americans, and there's six African American graves with stones on them on the top, and the whole thing's declared an African American historical site.
Whoa.
Okay, I just looked at that, and I just decided that, you know, the Eastern United States is a mass grave of orphans, and I wasn't going to let it go. I will continue writing fiction about this period. I have found hundreds of interesting characters. I have over 1,000 names of people who ran away. And I have other information on them, the scars on their body, what they were wearing, how many skulls they caused. There was a Philadelphia innkeeper whose maid ran away, and he took out enough space to write a 4-page poem about what a fat slut she was.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, it was actually a fairly good piece of doggerel. He even impugned her for having large breasts, okay, which was not a sign of beauty in those times. So I'm going to continue writing fiction about this period, and I'll have historical footnotes and endnotes. But after I'm done with the 12th volume, I'm working on the 13th tribe, which is about New England. That was the second Israel, Paleface, American Spartacus, and the final volume will be Plantation America. After all 12 volumes are done, then I'll publish Sold, which is a novel I've been writing about the life of Thomas Hellier, who was hanged in chains near a plantation called Hard Labor in His Majesty's province of Virginia for murdering his mistress and maid. So I'm writing a novel about this guy's life. And I put that one chapter a month on my Patreon page. And every week I post historical articles on there. And then once a month, I post a chapter in the life of Thomas Hellier. And this was a handwritten document that I was not permitted access to at Towson State University because I was neither an educator or a student. So it was not open to the public. I couldn't see into their library. So Miss Lockhart took her silvery voice.
Bless her heart.
She called up the Library of Congress, and the old man there, sent her a PDF of the photographed pages.
Wow. Wonderful.
Which is really, the people at the Library of Congress have been immensely helpful.
They are.
Mm-hmm. So three titles from that. And I just, at this point, I'm just trying to make sure that that there's some memory in our society of what happened to a lot of our ancestors. My ancestors, two of my ancestors I've been able to trace, and they were sold. Two English orphans sold to French Canadians by the British government, and an Irish man who changed his name to try to sound English, who was owned by, I think, one of the Talbots, the founders of Talbot County, Maryland. So my family goes back to the 1630s in Maryland and to the late 1700s in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandma, LaFond, always hated the English. And yeah, she finally told me why.
Good reason.
Yeah, they sold her, her grandfather, when he was an orphan. So the situation, and the other thing I wanted to cover in Pale Faces, the situation with Native Americans in the Eastern United States was different in almost every way from that which what went on west of the Mississippi.
Right.
And there's a lot of conflation of historical periods and areas of the country when it comes to this. And we're supposed to believe there's one Native American race and there's one white race, and people during that time did not see it that way. So I am trying to see it in the way that our forefathers saw it, which was that people, there were many European races and there were many American races.
Right.
That's how they saw it. And the term white man, black man, and red man, those are very modern terms. you know, the a white person, a noun, you don't even see that until about 1600. It doesn't gain common currency until just before the Civil War. The term black doesn't gain common currency till the last century, until the 1960s. And the reason why people originally called Native Americans sometimes Redskins is because they very often saw them painted red.
With red paint.
Red paint. They wore red paint.
Right. Okay, we're going to go to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 keep it today.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product! It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guest the last 2 hours has been James LaFond, and his links are in the chat room. I will post them again. I cannot imagine you ever not writing a book or reading a book. I picture you as doing that till you're no longer here. You're an extraordinary man. You really are. You mentioned that about this being a graveyard. Could you repeat what you said?
The Eastern United States You know, a lot of people read or watch movies about what happened with the Plains Indians. 30 years after the American push across the Mississippi, it's all over and done. It was 200 years on the East Coast. For 200 years, primarily children labored to fell these old growth forests that were thousands of years old.
Oh, yes.
Okay? They were lumberjacks. They liked to get people between 12 and 15 years old. Okay. 11 was perfect because then you could keep them for longer legally because they were considered useless before the age of 12, even though they were worked just like an adult. You had children cleared the forest that was the region of the country I grew up in. And you had 98% old growth forest cover when Europeans got here. And from 1607 until the 1830s, it took about that long for predominantly unfree lumberjacks to clear this land. There were no fields where seed was just planted. This was the oldest wilderness on the earth when Europeans got here. It was a managed wilderness. It was not, it's not that it had been untouched. The natives would do controlled burns. There was a huge nut crop. The fish crops, the fish catches were just unbelievable. Stuff that you, salmon runs like you had in Alaska and Oregon and Canada and Washington 100 years ago, 300 years ago, you had that around Philadelphia.
Wow.
New York. Okay, so... It was John Smith speaks about being able to see the bottom of the Chesapeake Bay. And when you stuck your hand in the water, you could not touch a fish.
It was, amazing.
It was the nursery that actually, it was the birthing place for the Atlantic Ocean. Chesapeake Bay is the largest estuary in the world. So you literally, the English and other Europeans came to North America with the view of physically and spiritually making this the new Israel, making it fields of grain and pasture. Okay, so you had, for 200 years, you had children and young men enslaved to kill the biggest forest on the planet. And they did it, and most of them don't have headstones, never had any headstones. And that's what you had Potter's Fields for. There's two Dutch tourists wrote a...
Oh dear, we're out of time.
Okay, don't worry, but thank you for having me on, Deanna.
Let's do this again.
Sure.
Thank you so much, James.
Okay. All right.
Bless you. Thank you. Okay, listeners, visit with you next week. Bye bye.
This is too good to be true, except this time it is real. 100%. No joke. How about a $25,000 membership to Front Sight Firearms Training Facility as a thank you bonus for a one-time donation to RBN of only $400? It is a Commander Lifetime membership with no yearly fees or dues. The training is free for the rest of your life with over 50 different classes. Then leave it to your designated beneficiary. You provide the approved firearm, holster, ammo, eye, and ear protection. Many features and bonuses are included, more than you would ever expect or believe. This is the ultimate graduation present, wedding gift, etc., etc. See the details. Go to RBN's webpage and frontsight.com to make it happen. You will hear this offer only on this radio network. Help keep RBN alive. Tell 5. You're listening.